Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I am your host, Ken Molman, and this is the My View Matters radio network. If you're tuning in for the first time, welcome. If you're returning, welcome back. As always, we're here live, 7 p.m. Sunday nights, at 7 p.m. Eastern time, I should say. And those of you catching us on podcast, we certainly appreciate that. But if you have the time, we do enjoy having people call in to talk about various issues. Which, if you are listening live, the call-in number here is area code 858-683-1326. 858-683-1326. So to get things started here, as usual, we will start out with the randomly generated political rhetoric generator. The output this week as follows. My opponent is palling around with drug dealers, filthy hobos, and fat cats. Always a interesting thing to see what they come up with there on the randomly generated political rhetoric. Getting to things here, this past week on Monday, so almost a week ago now, I was on KET's Kentucky Tonight, and I was debating the proposed statewide smoking ban. Now, the smoking ban is one of those interesting issues that does cut across political lines, and even there are libertarians that believe in a smoking ban, which is kind of funny that people don't realize that, but yeah, they do. And there are good reasons on every side. I mean, for the most part, the people that are pushing a smoking ban, I don't believe that most of those people are doing it for nefarious reasons. I think they are driven by one of a handful of things, and I understand. I mean, you know, hey, a lot of it is people just don't like to be around smoke, and there's a portion of the population that is that way. And in fact, there was a study I saw probably a decade ago that they had gone through and found a genetic marker that specifically outlined whether or not you were more likely to smoke or not. A genetic marker specifically outlined that whether or not you were going to love smoke, hate smoke, or be indifferent. And the same study showed that that genetic marker also showed correlation to your increased risk of cancer, which I don't know if in itself is what caused it or, you know, the fact that you're more likely to smoke and have probably smoked has increased that risk. But that was what the study showed. And so I guess the point is that there is the way that the study broke down, a third of the public just absolutely cannot stand smoking. They cannot stand one-third of the public loves smoke, thinks it's great, wants to do it. And one-third of the public just doesn't care. And I think it's a pretty representation of an issue like this because if you go back through history and you look at our founding and the argument over whether to secede from Britain, if you look at that, basically, the numbers broke down the same way. You had one-third of the people that said, no, we should stay with Britain, one-third of the people who said, we need to break away, and you had one-third in the middle who pretty much were like, eh, whatever. And in typical political ways, it's a fight over that middle one-third. It's not indifferent from elections, really, at this point, but it basically you're fighting, it's two sides fighting over the middle. So as a result, you have a lot of information flying around. You have a lot of claims being made. And in my opinion, there are bogus claims on both sides of the argument. I have seen the smoking ban issue, the studies that are out there, there is a large body of evidence that suggests that there are harmful effects from smoking and also from just being around secondhand smoke. But knowing how science works, it kind of influences your judgment on these studies because basically there are criteria by which these studies have to be done. The studies need to be looking at the right level, and they need to be looking at the right things. And the one thing I can tell you for certain, 100% certain, is that from a scientific standpoint, there is no proof primary or secondhand smoke causes things like cancer or COPD or things like that, because a cause, to prove causation, is a very, very high bar scientifically. You have to run studies that are under control groups, and you've got your control group, you've got your test group, you've got similar environments. You're talking about having to control all other factors in the scenario. Basically, what you'd be talking about is taking many, many pairs of twins and putting them in bubbles and exposing one to cigarette smoke and one to not over the course of their entire lifetime to prove that the one stimuli, cigarette smoke, caused something different than the one that was not. And, you know, that's that whole Dr. Mengele thing going, right, where he took the twins and, I mean, that's really disturbing stuff. So no one can do those tests because they are inhumane. So there is no way to prove causation. And that's very, very, very important, because the folks that tell you XYZ causes ABC are lying. And if they have a background in science, which most of these do, they should know that. But it sounds better to say cause is XYZ than saying there's a strong link or a strong correlation. Right? Correlation doesn't sound nearly as bad as cause. Smoking, there's a strong correlation between smoking and lung cancer. It's a lot more wordy and a lot less threatening sounding than smoking causes cancer. Ah! And so that's what they run around saying. And they'll say, well, the Surgeon General says XYZ, 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 Surgeon General, Surgeon General. The Surgeon General is a political appointee. Now, granted, they usually do have a background in science. Of course, it would make sense. But that doesn't say that they do not have a political agenda. As a political appointee, they are bound to have a political agenda. That's why they are appointed by political people with agendas. And so there is a new study that came out, and I brought this up on KET, and they poo-pooed it and whatever. But there's a new study that came out in the Oxford Journal. It's the National Cancer Institute, Journal of the National Cancer Institute. There's a study that came out and specifically looked at the effects of secondhand smoke. And what they found is that a study of more than 76,000 women showed that there is a strong association, see how they say that? Not a cause, strong association between cigarette smoking and lung cancer, but found no link between cancer and secondhand smoke. And so what they did was they looked over 10 plus years of data. This was a very comprehensive study. And essentially what they found is that in order for secondhand smoke to have an association with cancer, the person would have had to have lived in a home with a smoker for 30 or more years. Now, the pro-ban side, they don't like that kind of information. They say, the way they phrase everything is, one whiff of smoke, you're for cancer. That's why it's, oh my gosh, it's an epidemic. People are keeling over in the street. You walk by a smoker and you just die. And it's ridiculous. Something to be said for concentration levels. And that's actually what this study really shows, is it's about concentration and length of exposure. You're talking about smoking in the home over the course of 30-plus years. And this is something I have always tried to point out, is that there are methods and mechanisms to abate the level of smoke and the other chemicals, whatever they want to say, in the air through filtration, and that can be done. And the other side will never, ever see that. The pro-ban people will never, ever admit. They'll do that sitting in a smoke-filled pool hall where you can't see the guy next to you because there's so much darn smoke is equivalent to sitting in a very large restaurant with a very large filtration system and somebody at the other end of the restaurant is smoking a cigarette. They'll tell you it's the same thing. And obviously that's ridiculous on its face. Anybody with a clue knows that that's ridiculous. But this new study that came out is funny because they just deny that it exists. No, it doesn't exist. Now, it was published. The journal was published on December 6th of last year. So it's been almost 2 months. It's out. It's published. It's there. Simultaneously, the pro-ban people will tell you that there's no harm to businesses whatsoever. And in fact, there's up to businesses that passing a ban, you'll see tax revenues go up. Now, what has been found on that front is that restaurants, for the most part, absolutely do better business. And that if you were in an environment where almost every restaurant was smoking and you drop in a smoking ban, a lot of those restaurants are going to do a whole lot better. Now, as it turns out, it's just because customers prefer to eat lunch. That makes sense. You know what? I'm a smoker. Those of you that don't know, I'm a smoker. I don't like eating lunch in a smoke-filled environment. I'd rather eat in a non-smoking environment for lunch. That's cool. Whatever. But what we've found is that over time, and especially up here in Northern Kentucky, but in other places around the state, places that did not act a smoking ban, the majority of restaurants have already gone smoke-free voluntarily. Why have they done that? Because customers demand it. Because rewarded, their business is rewarded for going smoke-free voluntarily. It makes sense. And so business A goes smoke-free, and all of a sudden their lunch business doubles. Wow. Well, that makes all these other businesses try it too. And all these businesses, and that's in Northern Kentucky, over 70% of restaurants are smoke-free by choice. However, right, let's say 70% of the restaurants benefit. Okay? And of the last 30% that are still smoking, maybe half of them, it doesn't matter either way. I'm taking a guess. I don't have data to back up what happened to the other 30%. But what I do have data for is that there is a small percentage, what we know, there is a small percentage of businesses, of restaurants, that are harmed by smoking bans. Typically, these are your 24-hour diners. And we've saw that in Northern Kentucky. We've seen it, both with the restaurant ban that was passed in Kenton County and with businesses that tried to go smoke-free in Campbell County and in Boone County. Waffle House tried to go smoke-free. That went over like a lead balloon. Because what you have there is a large business on those 24-hour diners of people who have gone to the bar, now, after going to the bar, go to the 24-hour restaurant to eat, to sober up a bit, to go home, before they go home. And they're going to want to sit around and smoke cigarettes while they do it. It's just what it is. There's data on alcohol and cigarettes go together, whatever. The point is, there are, when you say, oh, well, smoking is good, smoking bans are good because they help the economy overall. That may be true. That may have been true. But my question is now, with the businesses that have already flipped at 70% plus non-smoking, are there any businesses left that would benefit? Certainly there might be one or two, right? A couple of business owners that are lagging behind, don't realize their business would be better. Although I can tell you in the last 6 years with this recession, business owners have been trying to find every nickel they can. These small business owners are getting squished. The point is that you're not going to see that economic benefit now because we let the free market work, and the free market has already adjusted. And so now what you're left with is, of the restaurants that allow smoking, a higher percentage of them will be harmed directly by a smoking ban. That's why they didn't change, is because they know their business, they know their customers, they know their clientele, and they know that a smoking ban is going to hurt their business. And that's why they keep it, smoking. As I mentioned, Waffle House tried it. They went months and went back because their business was decimated, absolutely decimated. I talked to a waitress in the Waffle House in Campbell County, and she said as much. She had actually left a month after they passed the smoking ban because she wasn't making any money. And when they went back to smoking, the owner actually caught her because she was a very good waitress and asked her back, said that they were smoking again. She had just come back. She just started again about a week prior, and I hadn't been in there the entire time because, well, that didn't cater to me. So there is economic harm, and in fact, a friend of mine has just completed a study. It is peer-reviewed. It has not been published yet, that specifically shows that nationwide, over a 10-year period, nationwide, there is a 2% harm to bars. Now, 2% doesn't sound like a lot, but until you look at the profit margins by which these businesses run, 2% is pretty significant. And we've seen other studies in the past that show that based on the climate, the impact is greater or less. For instance, it's not really a big deal to ask people to smoke outside or to have a smoking ban in Florida or Georgia or somewhere in the South, right? It's warm. It's not that bad. But by contrast, I talked to some of my friends in Michigan, and I have a couple of bar owner friends in Michigan. They've been absolutely decimated by the smoking ban because it's cold. It's only warm there like 3 days a year. It's Michigan. I think there's snow until July, and then it melts for like a month, and then it comes back in the beginning of September. It's cold. It's uncomfortable. And in fact, and I brought this up on KUT, if you go back and look at the literature going back into the 70s, the whole point of the smoking bans is to denormalize the behavior, to make it uncool to smoke. And part of that is punishing smokers for being smokers. That's why there can be nowhere that allows smoke indoors. Nowhere. These bans, the one they're proposing at the state level is the most extreme available. It's no smoking anywhere, anytime, except in your own home, and only in your own home if you don't run certain types of businesses out of your home. So it does encroach into the home. It encroaches into every business. It encroaches into everywhere. We've seen where these things lead. They inevitably lead. What happens is, and I've heard people complain about this in Ohio, because you can't smoke indoors, everybody's out on the sidewalk in the city. Well, now you got people in groups smoking in the city, and people have to walk through that, and they start complaining about that. So then you start getting the laws about, well, you need to be 25 feet away from a door or 50 feet away from a door. Well, in a downtown area, there may not be a place where you can even smoke at all because of that. The doors may not be 50 feet apart from one another. And it isn't about common sense, right? Common sense would dictate that a small number of places should be allowed to have smoking, even if you're in the big nanny state control thing, right? Because then you put all the smokers in their little room, and you get them out of sight, out of mind. That would be common sense. But instead, they throw them all out into the streets, and they inconvenience people more, which then they turn around and inevitably try to do outdoor bans, like they've done at UK. Like now, they've done it every college campus in the state because the Department of Human Health and Human Services is giving grant money to colleges who go entirely smoke-free 100% anywhere on their property. So we're now paying colleges to go smoke-free. And not just smoke-free in their buildings. I mean, most of them, if not all of them, were smoke-free in every building already. smoke-free anywhere, anywhere on their property. Now, if they were a private business, I would have no problem with them making such a decision. But as a public entity, they are not subject to the same private property rights as a private property owner. They're a public property. And so I have a problem with these policies because they're setting the stage for complete control of public property, which in a way, ironically, they actually have more say-so than over private property. But that's another story. There are there's a whole other deviation there we're not going to go into. But the funniest thing, and what I pointed out on KET, the point of these bans is not about public health. It's really, really not. Yes, there are people that support smoking bans that support it for public health, no doubt. Those people do exist, absolutely do. And I get it. Of those people that push the smoking ban for public health interests, how far are you willing to go? The woman from the Chamber of Commerce, the State Chamber of Commerce, somebody else eating a cheeseburger doesn't make you fat. Well, there's 2 points to that. A, number one, there are studies now that suggest that there is such a thing as hand fat and that you eating something unhealthy will encourage your people around you to eat something unhealthy and that therefore you should not be allowed to eat something unhealthy because it will therefore cause other people to eat healthier as well. Oh, yes, secondhand fat is out there and it's coming. And it's pretty funny. The second thing, and I brought this up on the show too, you know, they always try to make it sound like cigarette smoke is going to kill you instantly. And I pointed out that there's no ambulances lined up around this corner waiting outside of bars to take people to hospitals on Friday nights. I mean, that's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous claim. But there are acute allergies and acute reactions that happen to things like peanut butter and strawberries and eggs and milk and all these different things, whatever, all these reactions. And peanut butter especially. Peanut butter is one that you can just be around it if you have a peanut allergy, not even necessarily even touch it, but even touching it can cause a reaction that will kill someone with a peanut allergy. That's how severe it is. So if you're eating a peanut butter jelly sandwich next to somebody, yeah, you might actually kill them. And the question is, do we build society in a way that accounts for every single disability? Do we impose on business owners, private property owners that are open to the public, they open their doors to the public, yes, they do, but they are still private property, do we impose on those people rules and regulations that protect every single minority disability? Or do we let the free market cater specifically to those people, allow a business owner to decide to be smoke-free? Do we allow a business owner to say, hey, we don't use peanuts or strawberries or whatever in our food because we're all about making sure that people don't have reactions here, but whatever. Do we let the market take care of it, or do we ask government to impose it on everyone? And certainly, it sucks. I mean, having a disability sucks. My nephew has a peanut allergy. And it's not good. I mean, it's painful. It's annoying. You know, and it is life-threatening. It's not a joke. But at the same time, I'm not looking for a peanut ban. And make no mistake, people are. Oh, all these lunches from home things, part of their justification of the whole banning of lunches from home is the allergies. This is where it all leads. It's all about control. And they'll use it to justify whatever they want. Do you really think banning lunches from school lunches is really about the peanut allergies? Or do you think it's more about nanny staters? Well, parents don't pack good food for their kids, so we need to give a healthy alternative at school. And we can't let people bring lunches because they might bring something unhealthy. So we need to make sure that we control what these children can eat. Make no mistake, that's exactly what it is. And the peanut allergy is an excuse. Likewise, the smoking ban is all about, for the most part, it is driven largely by people who do not like smoke. Again, understood, but not looking for a ban on, you know, screaming kids at McDonald's on Saturday morning. I mean, I just don't go there because that's what's going to happen at the McDonald's play place on a Saturday morning. You don't ban things you don't like. You reward a business owner who provides what the environment you want and the food and the service and the environment you want by patronizing that establishment. And other business owners say, hey, that guy's doing great because he's doing X, Y, Z. I'm going to try that out. That's how the free market works, and it does work. We saw it in Boone County. When one bar went smoke-free, they did great. They did great. And other bar owners went, oh, my God, there's a market for this. And within 1 year, there were five or six bars that were smoke-free in one county. And those of you here in Kentucky know we have the smallest counties of any state. We have more counties per capita, blah, blah, blah. So you're talking about in a very, relatively speaking, small area, we saw the free market work. And in fact, in Campbell County, a bar went smoke-free voluntarily. And originally, they were people who were cheering for the ban. And I told them, guys, just do it. Just do it. Market it. Do it. Because there is a market for a smoke-free bar. Currently, it's a niche market, right? Not every bar can be smoke-free and everybody make money. But there's certainly a niche market for a smoke-free bar. We know that. We saw it in Campbell County, Boone County, Kenton County before. There are smoke-free bars in Kenton County, too. We've seen that there are niche markets for these things. And that's not to say that everybody's caught up yet, right? Sometimes it just takes that first guy willing to take that first step to be smoke-free, to take that risk. But that's what business ownership's all about. It's risk. Risk and reward. That's the free market. Risk and reward. And what these pro-ban people, that some of these business owners out there that are for a ban, are just scared, and they're not willing to take the risk to reap the reward. They want to socialize the risk by forcing a policy down on everyone. And you'll hear that. Oh, it's all about the level playing field. We got to provide a level playing field. No, you don't. The silliness of the health departments, and we've killed that over and over, that the health departments absolutely can play a role in protecting consumers, because health departments inspect that which is, as they say, unseen, which is the kitchen, right? Most of the time you can't see how the food's prepared or how it's cooked or what condition the kitchen appliances are in. And that you can't see if the employees are washing their hands and things like that. You just don't see those things. So the health department comes in, they inspect these things, and as Jim Waters pointed out, it doesn't really even have to be the health department that would do such a thing. You could, in theory, have a free market solution for that. And we've talked about that on the show before. Underwriters Laboratories, they're not a government agency. They review and look over electronic equipment and basically stick their stamp on this that says, this shouldn't burn down your house. That's all it is. This shouldn't burn down your house. Underwriters Laboratories listed. Ka-chunk. Right? Because that's when you buy an electronic device, especially in the older days, that was what people were worried about. Will this thing, it looks great, but will it burn my house down? And that's what people were worried about. So that's what they did. And we didn't need a government agency to say this thing will burn your house down or not. There was a private free market solution to do that. And likewise, you could have basically a private free market organization taking on the same exact role as the health departments. But because the health departments exist and because they're funded with taxpayer dollars, it would be very difficult to spin up a free market version, pay for it, and where does that funding come from when you're competing against something that's quote-unquote free, which it isn't free, in the health department. Anyway, the point is, we had a very good debate. If you haven't seen the KUT debate, I encourage you to go out to KET.org/KY tonight. Yeah, KET.org/KY tonight. Go to the archive shows. Look at the show from last week, which was the 20th. And take a look at that show. And they wouldn't come back to me for a while. So you'll see me hot and heavy in the second half. And, you know, you go back and you look at these things, and I always think, boy, I could have done so much better. I could have killed him on this. I could have crushed him on that. But I think overall we did all right. And the goal, the point is, we don't need a smoking ban in Kentucky. Heck, for that matter, local communities are already empowered to pass these things, so who cares? If it's really a problem for a local community, then the local community can take it up and deal with it how they want. Because every local community in the state has looked at this at some point. Somebody has brought it to their attention at some point because they're being paid to. Make no mistake, there's grant money galore out there for pushing smoking bans. So somebody's talked to somebody in the county over and over and over and over. It's happened. Letting the local communities decide, they put in exemptions for their specific area, things that are important to them. And that's what you would lose. You would lose that granularity of, well, you know, we need to exempt XYZ because we want to exempt the W Hall, right? Because we particularly think veterans should be allowed to smoke in their VFW Hall. State law wouldn't let that happen. Anyway, we're really long here. I'm going to take a break. When we get back, we've got a lot more to cover. Obamacare galore, of course, as usual, there's always more on that because it's never good news for Obamacare. It's always bad. But we've got plenty more. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be back here in a few minutes listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. Back in a minute.
Pounding away. We'll be right back. first impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Folks, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty on Bright on the My View Matters radio network. As mentioned, we are here every Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern time. We like that you're tuning in live. But or if you're catching the podcast, but also don't forget there are other shows on the network. We're here Sunday through Thursday. Monday through Wednesday is the Ed Springson Show, and Thursday is the Thursday Night Truth with Dale Gillespie. Definitely all good shows, all different content, and I encourage you to tune into the other shows as well. So anyhow, I did get a couple more things I wanted to punch in here real quick about the smoking ban, then we're going to move on. One of the big things that we have to be very cautious of is this health nannyism, is that there's all these other things that come out to talk about, oh, well, this is just as bad as smoking, and oh, this is just as bad as smoking. We have polls that show that sugar is just, or not polls, but studies that show sugar is just as bad as smoking. And, oh, sitting at a desk all day in your office is just as bad as smoking. Well, what are they going to do? Start putting treadmills in, make us gerbils? Are they going to, you know, they are, there already are obviously pushes to cut the sugar contents, and Bloomberg, Nanny and Chief over there in New York, banned the Big Gulp. I mean, these things do lead, one leads to another because it's the same line of reasoning. And at the end of the day, you, the individual, are primarily responsible for your own individual health. There is no one more responsible for your health than yourself. And I say that as someone who doesn't necessarily do all the right things, but it's my fault. I have a choice. And everyone else does too. All right, we're moving on. There's plenty of stuff. Well, I should mention the e-cigarette thing. Dang it, I didn't even do that. The point is that this is punitive because they do have the e-cigarettes put in these bans because they look too much like smoking because it involves in nicotine orally, blah, blah, blah. The point is that it has nothing to do with secondhand smoke. It has nothing to do with people who don't like smokers. And there are polls out that show that the bulk of Americans, if you ask them, e-cigarettes, should we ban them or not, people say no. Likewise, actually, if you break polls down about smoking bans, if you say, should we ban smoking in bars, the people will say no. And I bet you if you ask people who actually go to bars, if they should ban smoking in bars, that number would be even lower. So anyway, I just wanted to wrap that up. Sorry. it is kind of funny, though. the silly nanny state. In the end, a lot of this is driven by tax revenue. It's the desire for tax revenue. In fact, and we're going to get to that. Obamacare is that way, too. But what happens Reason magazine had a hit-and-run article that basically says what happens when people actually start being more healthy, when people start engaging in more healthy behaviors, and the sin taxes start to drop off, right? Tax revenue goes down because people are acting healthier. And so the sin tax revenue goes down. Well, what do? They start taxing healthy activities because they need to make up the revenue. It's all about revenue to the government. At the end of the day, the government is looking at numbers, dollars and cents, and they're looking at revenue numbers, and they really are. Pro-ban side on the smoking issue will always get out all these numbers that they claim will save immediate miracle cure savings, overnight savings, blah, blah, blah. The point is that it does come down to dollars and cents, and I think that's horrible because society should not be dictated based on social worth. It shouldn't be dictated on, well, how much money can I make for you today? Society should be about protecting individuals, other individuals who are seeking to do harm. That's all it should be about, plain and simple. If a government should be simply there to protect property from those who seek to harm it, including the property of the self. I, as a minarchist, believe that that is the proper role of government. And then the court system is there to deal with the people who don't, or to deal with people people who cannot otherwise resolve their issues privately as a means of final adjudication between those two parties. I mean, the other option there is to, you know, 10 paces at noon in the town square. So I'm cool with a limited government that does these things, all about tax revenue and how productive can we make people be. I have a really big problem with that, because think about that mindset. The government is trying to force you to be more productive. Think about that. I'm as productive as I want to be and as my employer insists I be. That's the whole point of the employer-employee relationship. My employer expects XYZ, and I do XYZ. And I might do even more than XYZ if I believe that that's the right thing to do, or if I believe that my employer will reward me for it. If I do less than XYZ, my employer may fire me for failing to do XYZ. That is the employer-employee relationship. Be involved in that, because when government gets involved, it's no longer voluntary. An employee does not have to work for an employer. An employer does not have to keep an employee. That's a voluntary relationship between employer and employee. I have the skills that someone wants. They're willing to pay me, and I'm willing to use those skills for that price. That's a voluntary exchange. But government, because of the income tax, has an incentive to try to force you to make more money, to be more productive anyway, to make more stuff that can be sold and have taxes collected on that. And so they try to force people into being more productive. That's what this nanny state health stuff's all about. That's what Obamacare is supposedly, well, you know, healthier people are going to be more productive. Wait a second. Why are we dictating productivity? That's a terrible, terrible precedent. I mean, it's one step short of somebody cracking the whip behind us in a chain gang line saying, move those rocks. You know, I mean, it's, what's the difference? I just don't like the idea that we have to be more productive, that the government is trying to force us to be more productive. It's a very, very bad precedent set. So, switching to Obamacare, because I said we would get to that, and we're running short on time. Obamacare, there was a story that came out here, when did this come out? Yesterday, that the companies that are cutting spouses to try to cut expenses in Obamacare are supposedly, in the long run, slitting their own throats, because it's going to, in the end, cause insurance rates to go up because fewer people will be insured, and they're going to pay the same amount in the long run no matter what. And a friend of mine, who is a proponent of Obamacare, posted this. And, you know, I look at this as simply another market distortion caused by legislation. What's happened is that companies, especially since we're, 6 years into recession, are looking for any nickel they can save. They don't care about 10 years from now. Many companies are struggling to worry about 10 days from now. And so, yeah, you know what? In the long run, they may end up slitting their own throat. But right now, all they want to do is survive. And so what we have are companies doing everything they can to cut expenses, expenses that have been increased by Obamacare. And eventually the market will work it out, right? That's one of the interesting things about the free market is no matter what you throw at it, as long as there's an ounce of freedom left in it, it will accommodate it. It'll eventually work its way out. It may not be great, and there may be a much better scenario, but the free market adjusts. It exists above and beyond everything else. And I would say even in the most totalitarian states, the free market still is able to overcome, at least in its own little way. What I'm told anyway, I've never been to China, but I've been told by a few people that have been there, that while corporations are banned in China, there are people on the streets basically engaging in the black market everywhere. You can pretty much buy anything you want. The free market adjusts and it changes. And people that, because it's very Hayekian, but basically the market is not it's not a thing, it's us. It's individuals engaging in activities. And so long as we're not dead, as long as we're not all dead, there is a free market occurring. I didn't mean to get on this deviation, but the point is that the market is trying to adjust now, right? Individual businesses are making choices that are affecting the market. And the market is adjusting. It's been distorted by a forced change, a legislative change, and it's now trying to adjust. So, yeah, there's companies cutting expenses and all this, and that's one of the big things about radical change. Radical changes are extraordinarily painful because the market can adjust for things over time. But when you have a radical change, there's a hiccup, a bump, and people feel. And that's why Obamacare is really not doing well in the public eyes. I've got, let's see here, where'd that study go? I'm skipping ahead here in my stack because I want to get to this for sure. A Reason Rupe poll in December showed that 55% of Americans would prefer to go back to the health care system that was in place before the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare, was put in place, while only 34% of Americans prefer the new health care system. Now, what does that tell you? We've heard anecdotes on both sides, right? We've heard some people are really getting better insurance than they had. And in a way, I'm happy for them. You know, I mean, as an individual who actually does genuinely care about other people, I'm glad that there are people that are being helped. The problem is that there seem to be, anyway, even more people who are being harmed. And so that's kind of stupid to help a few people to harm a bunch, or to harm a bunch in order to help a few. And so we have 55% of Americans saying they go back, 34% saying they prefer the current, which leaves about 10%, as usual, in the middle that don't freaking know because they don't know what day it is. I don't understand how those people exist. There's about 7% of people in every poll like this that just, I don't know. But there's some other interesting things in this poll that, just to note, you know, Obama is always trying to talk about how it was the most transparent administration in history, but 57% of Americans don't agree. They believe that this has not been the most transparent administration in history. 37% agree with the president that it has been the most transparent administration in history. 52% disagree with Obama's views about the proper size and role of government. 38% agree. 54% believe government is generally a burdensome part of society that impedes the ability of people to improve their lives, while 41% believe that government is primarily a source of good and helps people improve their lives. Percent of Americans believe that Congress does not understand the health care law or how the health care law will impact Americans. Only 25% think members of Congress actually understand the consequences of the law that they passed. And that one doesn't really surprise me. Remember Nancy Pelosi, the infamous, we need to pass it to find out what's in it, which, by the way, is the worst way to ever, ever do legislation, followed up immediately by, well, we need to pass it to find out if it's constitutional. What? That one was a funny one. The point is people are upset with the health care law. Actually, they're upset in general. What is it, 62% of Americans think the country's going the wrong way? I have that poll here somewhere, but I've misplaced it. 62.6% of Americans on average here at Real Clear Politics believe that the country's on the wrong track. it's not good. I mean, we're still in recession. Things are bad. People really believe that, you know, their trust in government has been completely shaken, which it never should have been there to begin with. You should never just blatantly trust government anyway. But their trust in government has been shaken. You look at approval ratings for the president, he's negative. Approval ratings for Congress, very negative. Direction of the country, negative. Everything right now is negative, 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 because we are 6 years into a recession. There's talk now on Obamacare that it's not going to work anyway because not enough young people are subsidizing, and let's make no mistake, forcing young people to buy expensive insurance is subsidizing the insurance of elderly people who need more insurance. You're forcing young people to pay for old people, which is what Social Security does, and Social Security is not in that great a shape either. And we've talked about this on the show before. You know, part of the problem is that even under Bush, when they did Medicare Part D, the prescription drug stuff, you know, that really bankrupted Medicare and the Medicare system. That's a problem. Medicaid has increased. You've got all these increases of the use of the social net that's becoming less of a net and more of a, I don't even know what you would call that. It's not a net anymore. It's just there, and it just does stuff, no matter what, whether you need it or not. That's not a net. Skyrocketing costs on that front, and they were driven by Democrats and Republicans alike. And so there is no doubt that something had to be done. I mean, you look at the long-term outlook of Medicare Part D. I mean, that thing was like trillions of dollars in debt the day it was signed. It was ridiculous as far as long-term future obligations go. But they're basically, everybody's in a panic now because not enough kids are signing up. And I say kids, young adults, 18 to 34, because I'm not that much older than that. But not enough young Americans are signing up and paying for insurance plans because, well, they don't get sick. I mean, 18-year-olds don't need comprehensive coverage for cancer and all these things because the risk is so, so low. What they need is catastrophic insurance. I've been in a car accident. My arm's been lopped off. I'd like my arm reattached or at least have the bleeding stopped. Catastrophic coverage is what teenagers need. Whereas as you get older, right, you start having issues. You start having problems. The point is that things are not going well. It's now known that the whole you to keep your insurance thing is a total and complete lie. They've actually, there's an article here from on Forbes that is from late last year that is basically calling out PolitiFact for trying to, for basically lying. In 2008, they were saying, oh, yeah, it's not a lie at all. You will get to keep your insurance. And then in 2009, they're like, well, there's no guarantee, but you should be able to keep your insurance. And in the 2012, they're still rating it as half true. And then finally, in 2013, they say, oops, that's a lie. And it's not like the thing changed. It was the promise. I mean, once it was passed, it was passed. So the point is that there are some places out there, these you know, PolitiFacts and those kind of things. You have to be careful of their bend and make sure that I always like to use multiple sources. I go to PolitiFact, I go to Snopes, I go to all these different ones and try to get the aggregate out of it because, you know, these things can have a political bent to them. But the point is that it's not – it's a lie. You're not getting to keep your insurance for a lot of people. They're dropping spouses off. Things. I mean, this thing is a disaster. Just an absolute disaster. And so I think, and the other side of it, though, is, right, despite all that, and the Democrats are going to get hung by that, the Republicans are not, at least not effectively, getting their message out about alternatives. They're just seen as saying, we don't want this. Well, what's your plan? We don't want this. Well, what's your plan? We don't want this. And maybe they have a plan, but they're not getting it out there. And what I'm seeing as a result, and it's just been in the last couple of weeks, really interesting, is an increase in the prevalence of the wedge issues, the classic wedge issues, guns and abortion. All of a sudden, the national debate is being shifted again to guns and abortion. Let's ignore the fact that the country's going bankrupt, that we're implementing the worst health care system that the majority of people don't want, that Republicans and Democrats have spent us into oblivion, that we're going broker by the day, that there's real concerns about another coming market crash. All these things are real, and they're looming, and they're there. No, we got to talk about guns and abortion. Look at the shiny thing over here. Look over here. Don't look at the bad stuff. Look over here. Guns and abortion. Ooh. Distractions. They're distracting us from what's really going on. And what's really going on is that we're in trouble. The country is in trouble. We have skyrocketing debt. We have other countries that are basically getting really tired of buying our debt because they're looking at all the money we've printed and everything else and going, boy, I don't know if that's really, they're really planning on paying that back. Or if they do, if that money is going to be worth anything. There's a whole lot of really scary financial stuff out there right now. And it's been caused by Democratic and Republican policies. And I think that's why they're, both sides are dredging up these stupid wedge issues that will never be resolved because they involve deep philosophical questions that we literally cannot find the answer to. Do you know when life begins? I don't. I have an idea. I know what I believe. But until you can define when life begins, which gets into a deeper question of why are we here, that fight's going to go forever. The gun issue, you're never going to resolve the gun issue. Back and forth and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. But it'll never be resolved. They're distracting us from the real problems out there. Eye on the prize, folks. We have a big problem coming economically, and we'll keep following it here on the show. But for tonight, we're done. Thanks for tuning in. Tune again next week. Tune in to the other shows on the network. This has been Kem Ullman for Liberty Unbridled, My View Matters Radio Network.